session that's entitled Teaching and Learning Innovations in Teaching. And my name is Robin Petzold, and I'm going to moderate the session today. What we're going to do is basically have four wonderful speakers that are going to present for 15 minutes each. I'm going to ask that you hold your questions to the end, and I'll describe a little bit about what we're going to be doing. But if you hold your questions just so that we don't continue to shortchange the last speaker, which sometimes happens when things snowball. But before we begin, Jessica Everett's just going to do quick things.
Yeah, hi. I'm sorry I can't stay through this session because of a scheduling conflict in another room. But I did want to welcome the speakers and commend the fact that we have representation from Mexico, Israel, and the U.S. here, starting to be more inclusive. Hopefully other disciplines in the future will be better represented. But I also wanted to make you aware of one of GHEC's products. It's Developing Residency Training in Global Health. It's a guidebook. It's available on Amazon and other online booksellers. As much as I'd like you to read this, I think it's also testimony to how easy it is to use GHEC as a platform to create such resources. So if you're not seeing resources that speak to you, your discipline, or your perspective, GHEC is very supportive of people that are self-starters. So I wrote this book in collaboration with many people, but basically it was just an impetus of mine during residency to start creating such resources. So I would both encourage you to consider looking at this, but also applying your own disciplines, your own approaches to similar publications so that we can, so that GHEC's products can speak to everyone accurately. And enjoy the panel. Thank you all for being here.
To extend your remarks a little bit, it's not that you only have to be the writer. If you also have a need that we haven't met, it doesn't mean we can do it right away, but we look for the gaps in the system. And so the residency book was also a gap that was identified. So make this more of a dialogue. It doesn't have to be a distant organization. Thank you. We have four speakers today. And I'm really excited about this program because, as Jessica mentioned, they're from diverse settings. They're also from diverse standings in the academic community, from students to faculty to administrators. They work with diverse students, from undergraduates to medical students to public health students. And I think it's a potential to not only hear what their special project is, but also to think about potential cross-collaboration. So the first, we've had to change the order a little bit, and the first speaker today is going to be Catherine Horan, Dr. Magana, Jay McLean Riggs, and then Dr. Nolan and Kaylee Satterfield is going to speak. We're going to, as I said, keep to a solo presentation for 15 minutes. Please take note of your questions because I think there will be questions and there's a chance they'll slip away. And we'll make sure we get back to them at the end. So with no further ado, Catherine.
Okay, hello. I'm Catherine Horan, or Horan, whatever, it doesn't matter. I'm here to represent, I guess, the student perspective on innovations in global health education. And just a basic background, I have an MPH in epidemiology from Boston University. I'm an American currently studying medicine in Israel, and I'm just about done with my second year. And I was a part of a group that, for the past 2 years, we've been involved in an extensive global health curriculum development. And I'm going to talk about a course we put together that was given this past fall semester. And it's essential to know just a little bit about my program for the context of the talk. We are the world's only global health medical school. It's called the Medical School for International Health. It's a collaboration between Ben-Gurion University in Israel and Columbia University in New York. The Columbia director of our program is Richard Deckelbaum, who is, of course, the president of GHEC.
Speak up,
there he is. Hi. You made it. So it's very exciting to get to present about this school here at this meeting. This is my second meeting, and it's been such an enriching experience to come here. So we're located in Israel. The program is open to anyone from the world except for Israelis, because the idea is we're bringing an international group of students to Israel to study medicine with this particular global health focus. So we do a traditional four-year MD program. We go back to the States for residencies. And throughout our 4 years of study, we have a pretty extensive global health curriculum that everybody is required to take. And this is really what draws us to this program. So it spans all 4 years. There's various components. We have academic, lecture, classroom-based kind of stuff. Every student gets to take 4 global health modules. You can pick and choose. We offer 16 a year. So you can almost build your own curriculum in a way, which is really nice. We incorporate a global health focus into our medical learning, so we do a little bit more on things like tuberculosis to put things in a more global context. I had an interesting talk with some students from one of the states in the U.S., I won't specify, but they said they had a 20-minute talk about tuberculosis, and they were told that it's not a big problem and they don't have to worry about it. And that happened a few months ago in a U.S. medical school. Ridiculous. Not acceptable. You don't have to go so far into TB, but to blow it off like it's nothing, it's kind of a modern tragedy in a way. Anyway, our third year, we do our clinical rotations in Israel, desperately trying to learn Hebrew so that we can speak to our patients. And then in our fourth year, we have this fantastic international clerkship. It's much more than just a medical rotation. It's a very well-structured global health experience. And we all are required to do a global health-oriented research project. So this is significantly more than your average school would need to or would want to incorporate into their program. But what I'm going to talk about today is, I think, basic ways that schools in the U.S. could incorporate global health into their programs. And I think we would all agree that they should be incorporating global health. So the group that I worked with consists of 8 students who are elected every year, 2 from each class. We work directly with the coordinator of our IHM program, who's sitting over there, Dr. Asher Moser. Very exciting to have him here. And we work on any aspect of this extensive IHM curriculum. And our goal for last year, my first year, was that we think that the approach of bridging clinical medicine with global health is very well done. What we wanted to work on specifically was the academic approach, what was being taught in the classroom and how. So our goal was to redesign the Introduction to Global Health course that is offered to all first-year students. And we asked for permission, and they actually agreed to let us do it. So over the course of a year, we slowly put it together piece by piece. And in considering what to teach, it should bring everybody back to this issue of global health competencies. There have been so many presentations about exactly this issue at this conference. The only thing, everybody has their own idea, the only thing that seems to be universally agreed upon is that there is no universal gold standard set of competencies. And I think there's a push to make them. GHEC is certainly working on that. But there wasn't anything for us to just pick up and use, so we made it ourselves. And the way we did that, a lot of us had direct experience in global health education, so we were able to bring that to the table. But it was just a lot of research. We spent a few months going onto every website we could find. Anywhere that global health was being taught, we looked at what exactly it was that they were teaching, and we tried to bring all this data together and find the commonalities in it. So we started with these 6 very basic, intentionally broad core areas, these core competencies. What we did next, okay, this is actually an older presentation. That's fine. So we're missing one slide. But we started with these 6 core competencies. And within each core competency, we added a more complete picture of competencies. So there was a really beautiful map. I wish it was here, but that's okay. So for example, one of our competencies is the history of global health. We think every student should know something about the history of global health. How do you make that competency a reality in education? You create a set of educational objectives that are clearly and specifically stated. And one of our objectives would be that students should understand the history of global health and public health intervention. The way we specifically met that objective was by putting together a 2-hour lecture entitled History of Global Health, and they were given a number of readings. So the idea behind creating this master plan of our global health curriculum was that we would have something that we could structure our whole curriculum around. And everything that we're trying to accomplish falls within these basic global health competencies. So I think that was an effective way to do it, because once you know what you're aiming for, it's a lot easier to actually put it together. And this took months. I mean, 7 months, I think, we were working on this. And then our next step was to actually make the curriculum. So when we put this global health course together, I remember coming across this excellent quote very early on, which says that global health is not a discipline, it's a collection of problems. So we talk about these common definitions of global health, this one beautiful definition that will tie it all together. But nothing changes the fact that global health is a massive, broad field with hundreds of different professionals working on endless different projects. So it really is a collection of problems and the various attempts to solve them. So if you don't introduce global health as a broad interdisciplinary field, you're not really properly introducing global health. It's okay that it's confusing and broad. It's okay to talk about it in such a way. What we ended up with to introduce these problems, we chose a list of what we thought were the most important topics. Again, these are the classic areas of medicine and public health that are being taught. And we had, I think it was a total of 19 lectures on these topics. And why we chose them, it was just what we thought was important. It was also very much who we had available to teach. We're lucky we have a massive university with an incredibly diverse population of academics. And so we were able to put this together because we had the people to work with. So any school that wants to do this, I think one of the hardest steps is to figure out who you have to work with. And for the first time in this intro course, we brought in a textbook. Now, someone yelled at me the other day, a doctor. He said, "Why did you use this book? It is absolutely horrible." And I said, "Well, what would you have used instead?" And he said, "Well, there isn't anything else." So it was a good point, because we're so at the beginning of the formal field of global health teaching. There isn't a textbook to use. When I did my MPH, there was one book, International Public Health. It's the big black one that you probably all know, massive. This was the first composite global health book. It's very thin. It's very user-friendly. We had all of our students buy it before they came in to Israel, and it was pretty good. They liked it. They started reading it before they got to school, and they came in very excited to start learning about global health. So start with summer reading. I think that's a really effective thing for students. We also put together a course pack with various resources, lots of readings and things like that, and we put everything on the website. I'm just going to talk quickly about the course pack because it was very popular with our students. We wanted to create one composite resource with all the information about our program. We put all of the information about this IHM curriculum, all of the objectives, everything, so that they could see it together. I put the UN Declaration for Human Rights, and I had people come up. Actually, Richard, it was you. You said, "I never read the UN Declaration of Human Rights all the way through before until you handed it to me." So there's a tremendous power in just putting things together. Yeah, you're a little late. but it's really effective to, you gotta, I don't want to say spoon feed, but if you make it too hard, if you leave them to just go on the internet and figure this out for themselves, it's a little bit too hard. So put things together. We have a book list, 30 books, all global health related books. And I tell people, you know, if you want to learn, just start checking off that list and you will know so much about global health if you just keep reading. Global health resources, there's a little section that outlines all the major global health organizations. What is the WHO? Most people don't actually know that. What is an NGO? What's a bilateral organization? We don't teach global health in high school. We don't teach global health in undergraduate universities. So why would they know it when they land in medical school or even in an MPH program? I remember Googling the WHO my first day of public health school because I was reading a paper and I didn't even know what it was. So start basic. Provide the basic nuts and bolts of this field. There is a vocabulary to it. There is a distinct world to it. And, of course, we put all the detailed syllabus and all these readings and resources. So for every lecture, this was also very warmly received. We had objectives for the lecture. And then you had your chapter in the textbook, a reading. And then I want to point out right here, just a shout out to GHEC. I think we're one of the first programs that formally used GHEC modules in our course. They weren't required, but I'll tell you that our more ambitious students did go, and they were looking at them. And so it was a nice way to bring in the work that GHEC is doing. Okay. We evaluated on a weekly basis to make sure that all lectures were being done well. And our final project, they didn't want multiple choice. They were very clear on that. And we didn't want to stress them out. We decided to go with a 10-minute group presentation on a specific global health case study. Case studies are extremely popular and effective in teaching global health. They respond very strongly to them because it's practical instead of theoretical. And they also wanted discussion, more discussion. So the overall question, I have 2 minutes left. Does global health belong in medical school? I, here, I'm sure nobody would say that it doesn't. We think that it does, but the question is why. There was a recent article in the Times that said none of the UN development goals are going to be met on time. And it called for a paradigm shift in the way that we are doing things. And I think that the only way to change the way people act is to change the way they think. And you change the way people think by changing the way you educate them. And putting global health, the principles, the values, this idea of human rights and ethics, it does matter, and it needs to be in medical school. It's not there. We're evaluated on little molecular things and not the big problems. And you, I think you can see it in the result. So just to end, as far as the state of global health today, if you open up Harrison's Principles of Internal Medicine, this book is translated into 100 languages. It's used almost everywhere medicine is taught. Chapter 2, there's an 80-page chapter on global health. So if that doesn't show you that global health is in the world of medicine, I don't know what does. And also, global health is an actual field now, and that's an important improvement. You can actually graduate from public health school, you can graduate from medical school, you can get a job that has the word global health in it. You couldn't really do that before, so that's great. And just to reflect a minute on the situation in Haiti, I think it highlighted both what is really good and really bad in the state of global health right now. What's good is that we had, from the moment this happened, an unprecedented level of financial aid coming in, and concern. But what was bad is that it was a gigantic mess. So it posed the questions, who is in charge of global health? Who is actually in charge of these massive international projects? What does the UN actually do? What does the US actually do? How do you channel millions of dollars coming in from all these directions? And we don't have the answers yet, but I think we're getting there. And this was just to end. This is kind of how we did it, the steps we took. And there was nothing particularly remarkable about any of us. We're just normal students that care a lot about global health. And we put in a lot of work. We treated it like a job, not a hobby. And there was an actual tangible result. So we're going to keep going for next year. And thank you very much. It's a big honor to speak at this conference.
I want to thank Catherine for a very thorough presentation from concept to objectives to strategy. And I know I have questions for her after, but we're going to take it on to the next stage of presentation by Dr. McAnios.
Thank you. Good afternoon. And welcome again to Mexico, to the Instituto Cuernavaca. We're really delighted to have you here. We always say that our house is your house. Nuestra casa es su casa. And this could not be really global if I'm not start speaking in Spanish. Now I'm going to switch to Spanish, yes, in order to be really, and you can really feel that you are in Mexico. So actually, my presentation is in English, just to help you understand and also for the translator. But I really prefer to speak it in Spanish for respect for my colleagues that are here that are Spanish-speaking persons. So, buenas tardes, entonces.
To all of you, I am very happy to host you. I am the academic secretary of this institute, which it would be the academic dean in the United States, and we're very happy to have you here. I thank you very much for allowing me to participate in this panel talking about global health and from a perspective from public health. Very quickly, because I only have 15 minutes, please don't be afraid. I just want to give you these guidelines of my presentation. I will talk about the need of speaking of global health in public health schools, and then we will discuss of what is happening in the curricula of public health in the Americas and what are the strategies that may help public health in terms of global health. Why do we have to move from this paradigm to a new paradigm when international health has been among us for more than 50 years now? Well, first of all, because international health has a lot. However, currently the world is very unequal, and this is the distribution of wealth in the world, and this is more pathetic, the distribution of poverty to this map. After so many international health decades, we have not been able to change the situation in the world. The report of health determinants that have been presented by some colleagues in this conference talk about some disparities that are unconceivable and lead us to think and consider that we have not done enough in international health. These are some examples of why we think that it is unfair that a girl being born in a country have not the same opportunities as other girl being born in Japan, for instance, in Sierra Leone compared to Japan. The life expectancy is going to be reduced. The chance of a child dying before age 5 in Angola is 90 times higher than in Finland. And this is at the level of countries, but I have lived in the United States several times, and Carlos del Rio said that we should not just go beyond that. Even inside our own countries, even in the United States and developed countries, there are inequalities that are impressive. I lived in Washington, D.C., and I could see the difference in living in the southern area of the city and in the northern area of the city. This was documented, and every mile that you move away from the downtown area of Washington, D.C., helps you in your life expectancy. The poorest 2% of Vietnam has a life survival or survival rate that represents 20% of the richest in India. And we could give you many examples. Those of you who have not read the report of health determinants, I just can say that it is impressive to see all these differences in determinants. And why haven't we been working with the world for many years now? Those of us who are interested and devoted to global health at the present time think that in the past we had the paradigm of international health understood through the aid of donors going to poor countries, and I talk from this underdeveloped country, which is an emerging country, Mexico, but that these people came to give us an aid towards the outside. And when we are thinking of a South-South perspective through the changes of global health, and this understood as a justice and right to health of all people who are born in this planet. So in this sense, we believe that all have to face common problems. It's not a matter of I going to help this other poor country, but we have common problems and we have to try to resolve them together. We are underlying the ethics, the respect, solidarity, and social justice. We understand health as a human right. And in this sense, we understand that the paradigm, and this was presented also by Pierre the first day, the dean of New Orleans University, he said that global health is a combination or integration of all domestic problems and international problems. We cannot just leave aside the disparities in the peoples of different countries. It is a combination of this that is creating these new paradigms, which is global health. Some people have attempted lately to define global health, how we understand global health in our new paradigm. And here are some definitions, some things that I would like to highlight. One of them is that global health is a way of seeing things and approaching things. There are important terms such as social justice.
Okay.
We can see that other people say this from the Institute of Medicine.
Says,
talks about health problems and all the issues and concerning issues that transcend national boundaries, and that we have to tackle them in a cooperative and collaborative fashion. In this global health perspective, we all have to ask ourselves, and global health has to be landed with very specific actions that help us improve life conditions and equitable distribution of power, money, resources, and welfare. And this will lead us to the need of forming a workforce and develop a workforce trained in understanding this new paradigm and what we have to do to tackle these social determinants of health. This takes me to the second issue, how public health schools have organized ourselves in order to try to resolve this problem. Public health schools in the Americas, including the United States experience, are trying to do this in three different ways. Either we do complete programs in global health through master's degrees, for instance. There are others who have an MPH with an area of global health concentration, and others that think that the best idea is to have cross-cutting competences, whatever you study, and this throughout the whole curriculum. And these are three examples. This is an example of a master's degree in Europe in global health. The whole program in the master's degree is in global health in Europe, and it is a two-year master's degree program. They take all their subjects and they have to go abroad to one or two countries to finish their program or complete the program. This is another case where they have a master's degree in public in health administration, and then they include areas of concentration where they add global health. These are public health master degree programs, but includes global health. And there are other institutions who have public health programs, but they are developing cross-cutting competences. And this is one of the models that I like the most, because I believe that we, irrespective of our expertise area, we should have health, global health competences. And this is a trend of some of the institutions. And just to give you an idea of how we are in the ASPH, this is the following. There are around 8 institutions that offer global health programs. 9 have global health as a concentration area. And some newer ones are developing cross-cutting global health competencies that will be developed throughout the whole curriculum. The first day you heard about this group in which we are participating, this ASPH, which is a special committee to develop competencies that are to be developed in the master's degree in public health. In this last part of my presentation, I would like to talk about the strategies that we may implement for global health. The first one, and we believe very deeply in this, is the South-South, North-South, and North-South-South collaborations. You have heard about the South-South collaboration, but we are convinced that we have to be inclusive. North-South and South-South and North-South-South is a paradigm that we have to collaborate in. The collaboration has to be to see the other as myself. We can learn from all the regions. The next one is that I believe that we should start sharing resources more. Technology allows us now to have different options. We may have a course with the North, with the South, or with the Southern of the Southern countries, and we may have collaborated courses or fellowships, and I have had different meetings. And that is why I was delayed to get in here, because I was finishing a meeting that I had with my Cuban colleagues. And there has been a lot of bilateral cooperation, and I think that is exactly the purpose of this, what we can do with all those resources and the available resources. There are technologies and experiences. I cannot dwell on this. I have some experience in 2 projects, but this is going to be in the conference website. But the Public Health Campus website is a place where we can learn about each other and collaborate. Another one is to have regional initiatives. Perhaps some of you have already heard about this presentation of the Mesoamerican Institute. I would just like to say that all these countries agreed upon the main priorities that we have, and these are the countries on the slide who are participating. These are the four programs at the Mesoamerican region, and it's a very recent collaboration. The next strategy is, and this is very important, of course, and you have already implemented this. The universities in the United States are giving preference to exchange of students, and this is an excellent strategy. There are strategies and resources that we can make you accessible, available to you. We have to revitalize and we have to bring health to the level of a right of every citizen. And we want the discourse to become a reality and improve the life conditions of all human beings in this world. Thank you very much.
I want to thank Dr. Magana for an excellent overview of potential international models that can be used or transferred to some of our settings. Dr. McLean Riggs is one of our first speakers we've had at introducing some of these issues to even younger students in the educational process. So with no further ado.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me here, and thank you, speakers, for a fabulous presentation so far. You've done lots of the groundwork that I now don't need to do. So. And thank you for GHEC for having me come and present on undergraduate education, and to all of you for being here. This is obviously the way of the future, whether you like it or not. The undergraduate students are making it that way. So there's a huge, huge billowing support for global health at the undergraduate level among students, and they literally demand this education. And that's one reason why you're going to see more and more and more of the students coming into your graduate and professional programs, having had some background and indeed some in-country experience in doing transnational or local global health projects. So this is really a cutting-edge piece of work. And I started teaching at Seattle University, which is a four-year Jesuit university, and I'm in the Faculty of Biology. And the students actually asked me, could you do a course on global health? So I said, sure, I could do that. And then the honors program said, could we use your course as part of the honors program? I said, sure, that's fine with me. And then the core interdisciplinary people came and said, the students want to do their capstone senior synthesis in your course. So can they do that? I said, that's okay with me. And then very quickly, the students at the nearby community college came and said, look, we want to have global health. Will you teach it for us? I said, absolutely. I'll be delighted to. So you will see this happening more and more. What I think is important for us to know is there are some really good reasons to do it at the undergraduate level, not least of which is the diversity of students. So I teach at the community college, and I love it because I know for every quarter that I bring 38 students through the basic course, and then 18 students through the advanced course, and then 15 students through the service learning trip. I know that those students are going into the field of global health, and not many will go into medicine because many change their mind. We teach them about determinants, and they change their mind. They become engineers, they become public health people, they go other directions, but they become fired up with passion. And what's wonderful is I know that by bringing those students through, I'm bringing a diversity of students. So these students come from very wide economic national backgrounds. We have, you know, a good example is last quarter I had a very quiet, subdued student come into my classroom, and she didn't talk to anybody else for a couple of weeks, which is pretty unusual in community college. And so I started trying to engage her. She had come to community college from the northern part of Afghanistan. Her family have never been in any university or college environment. They had saved up their pennies to send her to a community college. And her ambition is to be a midwife and to go back to Afghanistan and work in country. So I get the privilege of laying the groundworks with her. And oops, sorry, I'm leaning on the thing. The groundworks with her. I'll go over to here, because I think we've covered this. The groundworks with her, where we begin, we don't begin. Is there one in the back? Is that why? Okay. My apologies. We don't begin by teaching medicine. We begin by teaching ethics. Everything in our global health program starts with ethics. And we spend a good deal of time on that. And we use a good deal of narrative to teach ethics because we believe that pedagogically human beings respond to narrative. It's not an accident that you remember your patients. It's not an accident that you remember the stories that they tell. And so we teach by narrative. We also believe firmly in teaching by example. So we create the attitude and the politics and the ideas that we want our students to have when they become global health practitioners out in the world in the classroom at the beginning. So we start with that. And then we also do a massive amount of reflection. So I'm going to just run you through what our curriculum is, and then you can ask me questions. We consider the three key elements of the undergraduate global health curricula: a basic interdisciplinary course, an advanced student design seminar. Very important that it's student designed. This is patterning for the students in the future to be community-based and to consult their communities as to what they're going to do. So we lead by saying, this is our example. We want you to design the course. Sometimes the students do outreach. The last group of advanced students did a elementary school outreach where they went and taught about water in an elementary school in a disadvantaged neighborhood in Seattle, and they had an absolute blast. The students loved it. The elementary kids loved it, and they had loads of fun. Sometimes they do research things. Sometimes they do field trips. Sometimes they invite guest lectures. And it's really up to the students what they want to do. And then we do our service learning. And we don't regard our city as not being part of the global community. We have many, many, many opportunities to work in communities in our city that are profoundly transcultural, profoundly transnational, that deal with social determinants that they would encounter in any part of the world. And so we have them do that. We have three main objectives in our curriculum. The first objective is to educate the students, and we educate them beginning with ethics. So the first thing we look at is ethics and empathy. How can students walk in the shoes of those people that they are aspiring to be of service to? And we spend a good deal of time on that. And then we go to social justice and equality. So that's our second big topic in the curriculum. And we think it's really important to order your curriculum according to your priorities. So if you start by teaching microbiology, the message you're sending your students is that that's what's important. So we start by teaching ethics because we want them to get the message that that's what's really important. And then we go to social determinants, and depending on the students, that can take a good deal of time. The community college students have a really easy time with social determinants. They live in them. They understand them. It comes to them easily and quickly. They know what it is to be a refugee from another country and to have walked across miles and miles to reach even a place to get food and water. They know what it is to live without employment or multiple people living in a household that come from many different families. In the four-year Jesuit school, a little more difficult. We have to spend a little bit more time talking about social determinants and the complexity of social determinants. Then we do a unit on immunity. This is probably our strongest biology unit, and I've chosen it that way because immunity is a great reflection on social determinants. So you can really use the immune system to demonstrate how biology is a function of your socioeconomic environment and your physical environment. And then we go on, we talk a lot about indicators, and I'm going to show you how we do that, and we have a lot of fun with it. So then we all through the course, and particularly coming up towards the end, we encourage the students to be extremely critical, to look in the literature, to think, to analyze, to be critical of what other people are doing. Because as has been mentioned many times in this conference, you know, the developing and poor parts of the world are really riddled and littered with the wreckage of projects and plans and ideas that came from the north and didn't go well. So analysis, reflection, critical thought is key for that. And just I was just very, very happy and vindicated the first day when I saw that GHEC basically followed in the conference schedule my curriculum. So I said, wow, now I feel happy that my students are coming out way ahead. And then we do talk about global health players and policy, because often this is the moment that where the students are starting to say, I know I want to be in this field. What do I do? Do I want to be an anthropologist? Do I want to be an economist? Do I want to be in political science? Do I want to be in engineering? What do I want to be in? The second big objective that we have is to inspire the students. So we provide fabulous role models for them, both through reading and film, and I'll show you a couple. We also provoke them with negative role models. We deliberately make them angry so that they'll be able to look at that as an alternative. And then we do a lot with mentoring. We try to link them up with people who can mentor them in things that they are interested in. We use a lot of peer reinforcement so that they feel in a cohort, they feel in a team, because as you all have experienced, global health is often a little bit isolated from the rest of the academic structure. This is one last important thing here. We also pattern this element of our classroom. We make sure that the classroom is a culturally safe place for diverse people from diverse backgrounds. And we really, really emphasize that so that the students see that the difference that's made by making a safe environment for all kinds of people is an important part of public health and global health. And then our third objective is, as I've said, I think, a couple of times, to pattern, to make sure that we do what we say we want the students to do. So ethics first, important things first. Make the course tough. The course is really tough. And the students say, that course was so hard, you should really take it. It's really great, and it's so hard. So make it tough. And I tell them, listen, I'm interested in poor populations in the world. They cannot afford your fuzzy thinking, your sloppy working, your late assignments. That's not what they need. They have enough problems. They need rigor. So think rigorously. Make the course really tough. Don't make it easy, because that's not what the populations we're dealing with need. Make sure that the students are invested in the community and not the community that's 3,000 or more miles away, the community that's here and now in their own classroom and just beyond it. So we work a lot with our own immediate environment around the university or the college. Make sure that you allocate your time according to what you think actually makes a difference in health. So if you think that social determinants make a difference, spend your time on that. If you think infrastructure makes a difference, spend your time on that. Because the students learn viscerally that that's what's important. So if you talk about malaria and you only talk about the vaccine and you never talk about vector control, they are going to absorb that. That's what's important is the vaccine. Establishing causality, and we've talked about this, and we do a good deal on geopolitical status. So where are you in the world? Are you in a marginalized population? Are you in a part of the world where you have access to resources and so on? The elements of interdisciplinary, we've gone over, I think, already a couple of times in the conference, that linking the economic and political with the health indicators and outcomes is really important. And as I said, I'm just going to give you a couple of examples of things that we do that you might be able to use or think are fun or interesting. So in order to rile students up, we have them read Mountains Beyond Mountains. We have them watch Motorcycle Diaries and talk about what brings about social conscience. Why do people from different backgrounds choose to be in global health? Why do they choose different ways of being in global health? We also talk about Cuba and the Cuban program. We also make them mad, so we have them watch Constant Gardener, so they'll get really mad. You know, it's got a pretty nice undercurrent of lots of Hollywood-style drama that has its basis in some considerably well-researched fact. And then we have them read John Perkins, which makes them mad not only because of what he says, but because he's such an appallingly bad writer that they get extremely infuriated, but it creates fabulous discussion. You know, always saying the things that we should be doing, the students get a bit bored. So it's nice when they get angry and they're like, why are we reading this? This is an awful man. Like, yep, let's talk about it. And then you've already seen this in the previous person's presentation, but we do use things like World Mapper. And I'll take 2 minutes to describe what we call the country game, because it's really fun. The students are in groups, and they learn from to go from concrete to abstract. So they start early on guessing patterns of indicators, even when they have no idea what they mean. So they sit in a group, and the first day, they each have a sheet that looks like this on the left, and I'll say to them, okay, the country is Indonesia. So they have to guess. How many people live in Indonesia? Where is it? What languages do they speak? What's their GDP? What's their literacy? What are their demographics? What's their child mortality, etc.? And then every week, one group will research a secret country, and the rest of the groups will guess it. And they have so much fun with this. The discussion towards the end of the quarter gets really, really good. They actually make intelligent comments about why a country's GDP might be higher or lower, or why their HIV prevalence might be higher or lower, or why their disparity in country might be higher or lower. And they learn as a concrete, as a method of concrete learning, they can then use that to abstract the idea of an indicator, that it doesn't measure anything, it simply indicates things. But it's a very fun way to do it, and it means if I just stand and lecture them on all this stuff, I don't think it would have the same effect that it has. They, of course, look in the literature, and they do weekly journal articles. This is one of our students in Peru making chimneys for people to vent smoke from indoor cooking. And they do research, a little research project at the end of the quarter. The service learning is very carefully constructed so that they do at least 50% of infrastructure and some education and only about 30% clinical, even though we do travel with residents and doctors and physical therapists and nurses. And we use local in-country medical personnel with us. We keep our service learning at 50% community members or faculty and 50% students so that the rate of mentoring is very high for the students. And then we reflect and reflect and reflect some more. So thinking about why is this? Why does it stay this way? How did it get to be this way? Why am I reacting the way I am? Etc. So that's my hope for undergraduate education, that it's going to bring us a diversity of people into the workforce with lots of new ideas and a whole lot of passion. And if we can bring them through a program that starts with ethics, goes through social determinants, and reflects the behaviors that we want those students to bring into the public health schools, to bring into the medical schools, into the political science arena, we may years from now start seeing the outcome of that passion in the policies that they pursue. Thank you so much for your attention.
Fascinating presentation. It makes me envious of the diversity of students you get to work with in terms of career potential in the long run and the avoidance of some of the professional silos that we tend to work in at times. For our last presentation, we have a team of presenters. We have Kaylee Satterfield and Dr. Lexi Nolan.
Thanks very much. First, I want to say thank you. It's a great honor to be here presenting today, and thank you so much to my panelists. Amazing presentations from all of you, and I've been, furiously writing, and please don't be surprised if I write to you and ask you for your presentations, because my purpose in being here is to talk a little bit about some of the challenges that we've had in implementing an interprofessional course in Galveston. Could you go back to the first slide? Oh, thanks.
I can do it.
There we go. Just to make a quick comment, I'm the Associate Director of the Center for Training in International Health in Galveston, Texas, which is a beautiful paradise island off the Gulf Coast of Texas in southern United States. This is Kaylee Satterfield. She's our coordinator of our global health program, and we have been working very hard on a course with a number of other faculty from across our institution. Just as a little background for those of you who think that I live in a highly developed country, I do, but Texas has some amazing challenges in terms of access to services and health for a lot of the population. Even more challenges in changing the mindset about what to do about them and the importance of addressing things like health equity, which we like to refer to as disparities, and using social determinants of health to reduce inequities. Sorry, I have the same problem as Jay did, apparently. I'm sorry. Okay, the last thing to notice, just as an interesting remark, is everyone that we're working with on this is a woman. So these are our objectives. I won't spend too much time on them. I'm going to turn it over to Kaylee to cover a little bit.
First, I want to apologize. It seems our older presentation was loaded and not our new version, so we may be a little off. For our presentation today, we wanted to review the context of interprofessional education in global health kind of broadly and at UTMB.
Yeah.
Thanks. We're going to present the process for creating our Global Health Interprofessional Core course, which we lovingly refer to as GHIC. So I just want to get that out there. Outline some of the challenges to developing this course, and of course describe some lessons and challenges along the way that we've learned from and some things that we haven't figured out as well. Before I go on, I wanted to go over some definitions so that we're all on the same page on what we're talking about. Many groups do interdisciplinary training and multidisciplinary training, and I'll leave those up there for you to review. What we're going for is interprofessional training, which is when two or more professions learn with, from, and about one another. And as far as UTMB, we mean within the health professions context. Just a little background on global health at UTMB as far as our course. Our School of Medicine participates first-year students and some second-year students. Our graduate school in biomedical science, we had some basic science and clinical research science students participate this year. We hope to increase those numbers next year. And our public health students also participate. It's important to note our public health students are not, that's not their primary degree, they're MD combined MPH degree students. Our School of Nursing also participates. Undergraduate students we were not able to involve last year, but we hope to do that this coming fall. Our graduate students, we had a PhD nursing student and a master's nursing student participate. Our School of Health Professions has been very active. We had occupational therapists, physical therapists, clinical lab science, some participating by distance. And for future years, we hope to incorporate respiratory therapists and physician assistant students. We have a growing global health program at UTMB. Some background on our program. We recently received a Fogarty Frameworks grant, which has provided funds to increase coordination across campus and also fund student travel for international research scholarships. We have significant scholarship money for student travel for international rotations. We have growing decentralization of the program and increased coordination between all the various groups on campus and throughout the UT system that are working in global health. We offer a wide variety of opportunities to our students, including field site experiences, both internationally and locally in Galveston. We have monthly potlucks that are organized by the preventive medicine residents, and we use those opportunities for students, residents, and faculty to discuss their field site experiences in a very informal environment. We have a lecture series and global grand rounds where we use telemedicine technology to link with sites around the world for a case presentation. I'm going to skip the challenges for now. We had a lot of momentum going in for our global health program going into the fall of 2008 when Galveston was hit by Hurricane Ike, which in the aftermath we had departure of key faculty for our global health program. Funding disruptions and planning disruptions, but I think we're getting back on track and starting to move forward now.
Okay, please forgive me because I'm going to actually use our updated version to look at, but you guys are going to see our old version, but at least I'll get the content in. One of the things that we did to try to overcome some of the administrative blocks that have been described by other institutions was to link this interprofessional core course to a major university initiative. And at our university, it was the Synergy program, which is an interdisciplinary training initiative. So we were very lucky that our purposes aligned well. I'm not sure I can suggest that as a strategy, but the whole point of trying to look at where the administration is focused in backing projects as a way of building momentum for your own global health initiatives can sometimes work nicely. It also worked nicely that they asked me to serve on the steering committee at the beginning of this energy project, so I had a little bit of an insider's advantage there. In fact, what ended up happening was that Synergy provided tuition support for some of our students who would have to pay extra tuition to be enrolled in the class, which was great for supporting the interprofessional aspect of it. in terms of curriculum, they have promised support for activity development with an interprofessional focus, and also for faculty development, which is really important and still needs some work. The final area of support that they're providing is in terms of educational research, specifically an evaluation of the educational experience and tracking. Some of the benefits to Synergy are that the class is really popular. Global health is a very sexy course for a lot of health professionals in the United States. And we get a high participation rate among the schools, and that's been a particular challenge for the Synergy program, is to get the mix right, you know, so that you don't have all of the students coming from one program and trying to call it an interprofessional experience. It provides an early interprofessional experience for students, which is very helpful for them because it sets the tone for other Synergy projects that they'll experience. And they can use the evaluation information too. I'm sorry. So yeah, so there you see a graph of, these are some of the other Synergy projects, and you can see a real, each of these is a separate project, so you can see a real uneven distribution among students. And I apologize that these graphs aren't combined, but I got the scale the same. And so what you do see is it's a good distribution of allied health students, PT, OT, CLS, PA, and medical students. Not so many graduate students, but and very few School of Nursing students, but we're expecting this to go up astronomically in the fall because they have decided, how could we go out of the gate without them after we begged them to be part of this? So a good lesson. And so we think the interprofessional aspect of it will continue to develop. Okay, so in terms of the creation of the course, it really began, it was very rapid. We began last spring, and we developed most of the course over the summer. It includes an interprofessional faculty that were self-identified but very broad. And here's another, you know, real stroke of luck. I'm not sure how replicable this is, but we were able to get champions for global health in that whole list of students. The faculty sponsors for each of the programs are the chairs of the departments. So, and they're all interested. They all have a very strong interest in background in global health. Very coincidental, but the director of the OT program has done a lot of work, CLS also, the Master's in Public Health program. So we had these built-in champions that have been incredibly important in helping to keep the project going with the experience, the administrative and the teaching experience to keep it going, but also the administrative pull to make it happen. So the curriculum and syllabus were developed very quickly, the goals for the course, the mapping of global health core competencies among programs, and we did use the GHEC core competencies for the medical students. And what we tried to do for the other kinds of students was to look for global health-related core competencies if there wasn't something specific out there that had been proposed. I think nursing had a proposed global health core competency that we found. But for some of the other programs, we tried to look to their professional core competencies and tie in the global health aspect so that we were responding to core competencies for all of the students involved. We agreed to focus on public health and systems, and we also wanted the course to complement existing global health activities. So the structure of the curriculum is that students meet on Wednesdays from 5 to 6:30 at night, which is after all other courses, and we were surprised that we got permission to do that. It runs from September to April. It's on a weekly basis. Once every 2 weeks, we have large group interprofessional classes, and on the off weeks, we have the specific program groups of students and programs get together to talk about their own profession-specific issues in relation to the topic that was discussed that week. Do you want to talk about
that? For our students who participate in the course through distance methods, and also for some of our students who are on campus but due to schedule problems, we have to accommodate them by distance learning. We've utilized UTMB's Tegrity system, which records video, audio, along with PowerPoint, and also utilized Blackboard, which is a very common distance learning modality, to upload resources and web links and readings for the students. It's also important to note that our travel safety lecture, which was done by Dr. Clinton White, was recorded and is being edited and will be offered to all UT system schools for their use.
And that was a specific effort to try to support global health training within our sister institutions in our system. So some of the administrative challenges. We know that there are some usual suspects, including scheduling, curricular time, credits, and uniformity of credit awards, and academic policies. Those are things that we just worked through. They're cited in the literature. The faculty time and compensation for faculty time is something that's still problematic, also cited in the literature. And then something else that's cited in the literature is resistance by the administration. We didn't actually have that problem. But we did encounter a few others that we didn't find in the literature, which was how do we sustain the enrollment of students across the schools even when the tuition support ends. And we're not sure that that's going to be a problem, but we don't know yet. Also, the faculty development in terms of having faculty that are very strong in dual skills of interprofessional education and global health is something that will need to continue to be improved. This is a list of some of the topics that we address in the course, the list of course topics. Very similar. I think people on the panel will recognize a lot of the same ones. And these were some of the comments. There were lots of positive comments about the content that they liked, the competencies and the group activities. They liked having interprofessional faculty, especially when they could see them working together. But then we got interesting negative comments too, like they wanted more small group activities, but then also other people wanted fewer small group activities. So we're still working through some of the comments on what worked and what didn't work. In particular, some students came in kind of wanting more field talk about clinical skills and, you know, getting out there. So they weren't quite getting that idea of the global health competencies. So one of the things that we learned is we really need to clearly define the purpose of the course at the beginning and share that with the students, how the competency, how the structure of the course was developed. We need to continue to be careful about scheduling because semester schedules change every year, and when you show up to a class and there's only, you know, half the class there because somebody has a test, it's problematic. And we do have some of our infrastructures being rebuilt in Galveston after the hurricane, and we're hoping to have a better physical environment. Last year it was in a kind of a lecture hall, and we're hoping to have more of a more friendly small group activity kind of environment. These are some of the future directions. We have a lot of work that will happen in the next year using this committed group of faculty to advance the work. One of the things that we have a specific focus on is to actually have the medical students get credit for this. Currently, they don't get credit. It's just part of their global health track requirements. And so we've developed a way to provide them credit. Now, what's interesting about this, though, is that many of these items are things that they already have to do in relation to completing their global health track requirements. So we're trying to find the balance between getting them credit, but also not overwhelming them and overburdening them, which is a big concern of the administration. So we do have questions, and hopefully this will lead into our next segment. Thank you very much.
We have about half an hour left. First, I want to thank our speakers again for some truly interesting presentations. Catherine's presentation, again, was on curriculum that was designed and advocated for by students. Interesting curriculum focusing on an American-Israeli international collaboration. We have Dr. Magana's presentation that included excellent models being used internationally, potential best practices that can be transferred. We had Dr. McLean Riggs' presentation on perhaps a group of students that's new to a lot of us, and I think it's a great way to be a pipeline program for many of us, bringing students into the field. And we have Dr. Nolan and Ms. Satterfield's presentation on an excellent curriculum that perhaps includes some of the same challenges as well as effective strategies that we're using in some of our courses. Since we have limited time, I do want to open it up right away for questions. So if you have questions, raise your hand and I'll pass the mic to you.
Sure. Ted Schrecker from the University of Ottawa, Canada. I'm going to come away thoroughly energized from this, which I think has been the best session of the conference, at least the best I've attended. And this is, you know, wonderful presentations. You will get emails from me requesting them in due course. One reflection, and it's only that. It is not in any sense a critique. I wonder about the wisdom of using country-level indicators without some further elaboration. Because, you know, for example, those of you who saw Marco Ackerman's presentation know that he has a wonderful demonstration of how areas within Argentina that look relatively well off at a macro level are revealed as containing pockets of desperation when you use a smaller geographic level indicator to show the level of poverty and affluence. Here in Mexico City, you can see from any of the autopistas the level of sheer poverty, and yet you can also see Roche Bobois and Bang & Olufsen stores. Well, I live in a G7 capital, and we don't have those. You know, you can see the same high-end cars in Mexico City as in Montreal, just not as many of them. So I wonder about, and by the by, the difference in median income between the richest and poorest census tracts in Canada's largest city is considerably greater than the difference in GDP per capita between Mexico and the United States. So I really wonder about, you know, if the idea is to sensitize people to the way in which fortunes and the ability to lead long and healthy lives are polarized, I really wonder about using those country-level indicators without some further elaboration.
Does anybody able to hear his question? Okay. I know who wants to address it. I did notice that you included a Gini coefficient in some of your data.
Thank you for a fantastic presentation. I really enjoyed it. And yes, we have this debate a lot. And what's wonderful is that the students bring this up a lot. And what we typically do is we follow... So they're fantastic. So we typically follow a country game presentation game episode with exactly that, a follow-up of what's happening inside the country as to the best of our knowledge. And we, you know, this is a very short time to talk about all the things we do. We specifically focus on economic consequences of political actions. So, I mean, one of the narratives that I love to use in my course is Stephanie Black's Life and Debt, about how the IMF impoverished Jamaica and destroyed their agricultural system. And the students love that. And we do that also in country. Our problem coming into it is, and I hope I won't offend anybody by saying this, the American public system regards the study of geography as an anathema. So there are many students coming into the college level who actually cannot place places on the map by any measure at all, by ocean, mountain, river, language, country, you name it, they can't do it. So I'm frequently having the experience of saying, I'm sure Fidel will be very happy to know that his country has now become Indonesia, according to you, you know, and things like that. You'd laugh, but it's actually real. And so that's why we start at the country level, and then we move into the into the county. And we do a significant amount on that. And I think it's a really well taken point. And it's one of the things after watching your presentation, I thought I'm going to try and bring more of that into how the students look at the world, not using national boundaries as much. Yes. And also we use, you know, Rosling's Gapminder. And just so that you know, there are lots of textbooks on global health. quite a lot, about 7. And we use the one out of the Karolinska Institute, Introduction to Global Health, which we absolutely love, which does focus a good deal on that. So,
you're absolutely right. And Mexico is, unfortunately, a very good example of that. I'm glad that you all came to Mexico, and I wish you have a little bit more time in order to go in deep with the country. If you go to Chiapas, that's why we don't like to use, averages, because that's not representing the truth. If you go to Chiapas, in Chiapas, and on some of the south states, you have more or less the same indicators as the worst parts in Africa. I mean, we're really very bad in Chiapas and the south part. If you go to the north part in Mexico, Monterrey and Tamaulipas, we have more of the high, very similar to your best indicators in the States. So if you go to average, we said, oh, Mexico, it's quite good. You know, it's really not at all like that. So I completely agree. And I would like to link that question to the comment about the paradigm in terms of the collaboration. Because if you use just study cases in your class, when you are not in that country, I mean, for example, if I said, okay, I have never been to India, but I'm going to use this case study, and I think, in my perspective, that might be a correct case study. But if I go to India, or if I have an Indian partner, I'm sure that person will identify a much better study case than myself. So that's why collaborative teaching and learning is the way to do it. It's just not enough in order to know or to bring together to the class some case studies that you find out in a book. It's better to ask them to real world, to real situations in the States, and go directly to the state, different states, not really the and the national level. So that's an excellent question.
Probably one of the advantages to coming from background in health equity is that you can, and being the course directors, that you can kind of squeeze your take into every single class that gets done one way or another. And what we have done is used equity issues as a bit of a cross cutter in the different courses. So, for instance, when we have the session on the impact of globalization, and we use Dr. Schrecker's and Ron Labonte's framework on the impact of globalization down from the international level down to the local level, we talk about differential impacts in the society. So, the other thing that we do, and that it brings it, makes it very real for the students, is that we can talk about it in the context of Galveston, because we have just gone through a hurricane, and all of our poor population is still displaced. And so we can talk about it in a very real sense that they see viscerally every day.
Can I finish that thought? I trained in epidemiology, so population-level data, before I came to med school, and I noticed that a lot of my fellow students, if you show them a map of the incidence of malaria, they just look at it and say, oh, okay, those are the numbers, that makes sense. They don't analyze why that map is that way, because they don't really know how, and I think I would encourage you as an educator, you must encourage the concept of analysis and really thinking through things, and lies, damn lies, and statistics, the famous mantra. The numbers aren't necessarily evil, but you have to know how to interpret them, so it's essential that you include that in any curriculum. Teach them to question everything and to find the deeper meaning, what we like to call confounders in the world of epidemiology. So,
hi. So I was wondering about, and this can go to all of you guys, about evaluation systems of the student's knowledge or what you use to evaluate. And then I know that we don't really have a set standard of competencies, but how do you deal with that in terms of evaluation?
I can start really fast. We didn't know what to do to finish this course, so we asked them. Now, ours is different. We're not training master level public health students in global health. It was just a course for medical students. So we asked, do you want an exam? Absolutely not. It was unanimous. They did not want to be tested on, the budget of the WHO, memorizing that textbook. Absolutely not. That would have been, I think, a real failure. And we asked if do you want to write a paper? They were a little more amenable to that. But we brought up presentations. Do you want to give a presentation about a global health problem? And they loved it. And we did an end of the course survey, and they said they learned more from these case study presentations. They had so much fun doing them. They asked that we incorporate them throughout the whole course. And so that was really helpful to us. So I think getting them to think and design in these small groups about
case studies because it's practical and not just theoretical or factual. So that was the way that we did it.
Okay. Well, wait. Yeah, I think the silence or the only partial answers is an indicator of a challenge we're all facing. And how do we know we do the right thing? And I think it'd be a great topic for a future session of we do design, you know, we have the best intentions, we're energized, but how do we begin to evaluate this so we can progress? So please don't let that just fade away. It's a great, great topic. Other?
I would like to add one quick thing to that and put a plug for problem solving, that in the evaluation, that if you create a problem for the students to solve, it gives them practice in working with how to solve problems. And so, I mean, it can take any format. We use a, probably we choose a community, we make it up. It's a fantasy community. We give it parameters and problems and characteristics, and then we ask them to come up with solutions to the health problems. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Iris from Canada. I was wondering, like, for the students who are in universities that currently do not have this kind of curriculum, and even if we try to push this kind of curriculum, it looks like it's going to be a long-term project to integrate. What can we do extracurricularly? What can we do in order to get our own global health education, in order to, like, go through an education and not, like, miss, like, crucial elements?
I want to be the first to respond just on behalf of GHAC. GHAC is putting together and has a tremendous set already of modules that we're standardizing a bit more that can be learner-directed. They begin with a PowerPoint presentation that you can pull up online, has extensive supplementary notes, has an ending quiz so you can see if you really grasp some of the basic concepts. The idea is that they're for the individual learners but can be used in a classroom setting. But I think it's a great start. I also want to tell you some of the things I've seen happen around different schools in the U.S. If you can't afford to get a curriculum started, think smaller. Think intense seminar session. Think of a global health week. See if you can demonstrate the interest to your administration by having a successful smaller project that might be carried. But don't trivialize some of the textbooks and the wonderful online resources.
Yeah, you might find maybe some of our institutions that are already in this topic will have online discussions, forums, even courses, learning objects. So I encourage you to look under our own websites in order to, you can start with that. And I congratulate you because I think that's the way to do it. I mean, when things happen because the students want it to happen, it's the easiest and the more suitable way actually to do it. So I'm sure it's going to happen. It doesn't happen at your institution yet.
Well, I'm actually just going to finish responding. So my advice to you, there's kind of two ways to go about it. If you're able to push for an actual curriculum, start a group like we did, a core group of students that are genuinely dedicated and that are willing to work and sit and write these things out. If you're able, even if you don't have a global health department, a lot of schools don't, if you're able to get a faculty member involved, maybe there's funding available, go talk to your dean. I'm sure he or she would be happy to just talk to you. If it's really not a reality to get an established curriculum in the school, book club, once a month, read one of those great global health books that's out there and talk about it. If you have a group of people that are interested and you make it a regular thing, you can set your own schedule. Journals, do a journal club, weekly, biweekly, whatever. I guarantee you if students do care and if you choose good articles, you can start learning that way. But again, have a core group of students that are kind of controlling it. Otherwise, it can all dissolve and be a little bit messy. But there are lots of things that you can do. And the GHEC modules, things like that, they are available. But make a plan first and then follow it. Don't just, you know, so.
I just want to give you a one-hit wonder possibility. Find a speaker who is moving to you here. Invite a single speaker and get your administration in the audience. But have the speaker know this is one of the reasons you're inviting so that they can include the importance of global health in the curriculum. And take that one opportunity to grab the administration and make them meet the speaker, because there are people here who are truly committed to this. And if you don't have the core group of students to put together a larger project, have a small success and get the right people in the audience. Don't let it go.
I have a comment for you, too. One of the poster sessions in the A group actually has a boxed curriculum that is intended for schools who don't have a global health program. So you can order them. They're free. And they have a bunch of study sessions that you can just do by yourself with a group of other students.
That's actually on the American Medical Students Association website. So it's like a bunch of study sessions that were created, and 9 medical schools throughout the U.S. actually piloted it last year, and so I can get you that stuff.
Sorry. So this is a question for Dr. Magaña. I was wondering, do you, in the programs here for the Master's in Public Health and the Master's in Global Health, do you guys do a lot of work within the communities in Mexico, and which communities do you go to?
Yeah, all our master degree students, they are required, actually 3 semesters of practicum. So we do the practicum all around the 3 semesters that they are here with us. They're part of the curriculum, regardless of the global health. It's just, local communities, and they work closely here in Morelos, but with indigenous population or with communities that are maybe a couple of hours from here, even or very close to here. And we're starting to have more communities now international. But so right now, every single student, they have to, it's a requirement.
Hi, my name is Scott Lolliger. I'm actually not part of a medical school, but part of a residency. And I was wondering if at any of your programs there was an attempt to link the excellent efforts that are being done at the medical school level, because many of us that work with residencies struggle. The training process in family medicine, which is where I am, is 3 years. It may be as long as 4 years. Doesn't lend itself the way medical school does to these sort of teaching modalities. So I think in the future we're going to have to confront that, you know, we're really getting really bright, interested medical students, and then we're dumping them into residency. And there's no continuity. We probably don't have a lot of data about, you know, the outcomes of the global health program. So I'm wondering if any of these really wonderful programs that were discussed have attempted to link with the local major academic center or otherwise.
I can tell you at UTMB that we have global health tracks in the family medicine, and we're about to start one in the internal medicine departments. One of the challenges that we have is we have a lot of foreign medical graduates who aren't actually very interested in studying global health. They're interested in coming to the United States and staying and practicing, which is its own major ethical problem that we talk about in the course. One of the things that we'd actually like to start doing to use that is to actually use those residents to come and be part of the training of the students when it's appropriate. But it is problematic simply because of the scheduling issues. Of course, at the resident level, you have funding issues that can really bite you administratively trying to get it through. But maybe Jessica's book could help us figure out some of that.
I can speak a little bit to it because this will be my first time doing it. But I was asked by a group of residents to do a course for them in Seattle, and we are structuring it as it'll be from 7:30 in the evening, and it'll be 3 hours, and there'll be 4 sessions, and that's at their request. I developed this course actually when I was in Dar es Salaam last year, because a group of residents in Dar es Salaam Tanzanian residents asked me to do a piece on global health for them, and I said, sure, I'd be happy to do it, and we developed this four piece, and it was great for them. I felt like they were left with, now what? You know, now you're going back to Seattle, and now what do we get? You know, and I fear the residents may be left with that even in Seattle, but it's a way to try to keep it contained for their schedule. But I think it's important that they get theory as well, global health theory, not just infectious disease theory. So, yeah.
Hi, my name is Dina. I'm a public health nurse. You talked a lot about ethics and equity and human rights in the global health education. And, Jay, you mentioned something about safe space. I was just wondering, in all the courses you run, whether how when you discuss the political determinants of health and how that sort of generates discussion, or how do you actually confront such issues in places where there are political injustices?
Yeah, it's the most fun part of the course, actually. We really enjoy it because it's wild. Everybody has opinions. The whole idea of a political dimension of health at first raises people's eyebrows, like, what are you talking about? And we really get into it, and we really talk about it, like what is the impact actually on health? And of course, because being in the United States, we're a country at war, it gives us ample opportunity to think about our participation in that war and the health outcomes of that war and how we feel about it. And the students get really riled up by it. Yeah. I think it's a really critical part of global health that we often don't emphasize. Yeah.
I completely agree. You cannot avoid talking about politics. You have to. It's one of the things that are really present, and that most of the determinants also have an influence because of the politics. And the way we do it, we include that in our curriculum, is that we always tend to have the different positions in one of at the sessions of one of the problems that we are looking at. And we can have in the class, or even with the internet, presentations, short presentations of the different positions in an issue, or the better, because I think that the students have to really, and it's surprising how bad they are informed in terms of politics. I mean, they hear the news, but that's by it. So I think that the more we expose them to different politicians, different positions, either we like it or not, but I think that it's just a way of diversifying all the opinions in the class, and we need to discuss this in class. I think it's a very important issue, especially in the social determinants of health class.
The questions have been terrific. I'm kind of watching the clock, and I know as some people trickle out, I'm not chasing anyone out. I have been passed a note that as we're coming to the end of the day, please remember to return your headphones, your translation headphones, in order for us to continue to have conferences like this and have interpretation. So if you're starting to trickle out, drop off your headphones before you go. But I don't think the speakers are running out right away. So are there other questions? You're back.
I can't resist this. You have the luxury, Laura, of teaching in a country where politicians have meaningfully different positions.